Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I'm reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, October 31st. Texas Tech University named Fulbright HSI leader by U.S. Department of State. Texas Tech University is proud to be named as a Fulbright Hispanic Serving Institution HSI leader for 2023. The university is one of 25 doctoral universities to earn this designation. To be recognized as a Fulbright HSI is a tremendous honor, Provost and Senior Vice President Ron Hendricks said in a news release. It's thanks to the work of those faculty, administrators, and students who participate in the Fulbright program that we are in this position. Their work, however, brings valuable knowledge and experience to Texas Tech. Fulbright HSI leaders demonstrate noteworthy support for Fulbright exchange participants and promote Fulbright program opportunities on campus. The initiative encourages administrators, faculty, and students at HSIs to engage with Fulbright and highlights the strength of HSIs as designations for international students and scholars. Texas Tech's connection to the Fulbright program dates back to 1957. Texas Tech has been recognized for the third year in a row as a Fulbright Hispanic Serving Institution, said Elizabeth Trejos Castillo, Vice Provost for International Affairs. This recognition truly represents Texas Tech's unwavering commitment to global education and building a worldwide community while contributing to the lives of diverse populations. Assistant Secretary of State for Educational and Cultural Affairs Lee Satterfield commended the institutions receiving the Fulbright HSI leader designation this year. Representation matters, and pairing the world-class educational opportunities that Hispanic-serving institutions provide with the power of Fulbright further enriches the experience and educational opportunities for students and scholars both at home and abroad, Lee said. The recognized colleges and universities include two associates colleges, five baccalaureate colleges, and special focus institutions, 14 master's colleges and universities, as well as the doctoral university designations. Texas Tech's commitment to international research is highlighted through this designation, said Vice President for Research and Innovation, Joseph Heppert. Our university is greatly enriched by the experiences our Fulbright participants bring back to Texas Tech. Texas Tech is hosting a Fulbright Scholar in Residence awardee for the first time. Mario Solis from Puerto Rico is the recipient for the 2023-24 academic year. The philosophy professor from the University of Costa Rica was selected by the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. A total of 177 faculty and administrators across diverse disciplines have served as Fulbright scholars, Fulbright specialist, and Fulbright Higher Education Administration Fellows across 68 countries, said Trejos Castillo. Texas Tech has gained national distinction as a top student and scholar producer in the past years. Gail Pond Alamo staff surprised with Consuela bags. On a whim this summer, Gail Pond Alamo STEAM Academy principal Alicia Sessions filled out an application to be part of the Consuela, It's Not About the Bag program, that celebrates women who impact the world in positive ways. At first, she was told the program typically celebrates only one or two people at a time. However, later that day, the company called back and told her they were going to make this group celebration happen. Fast forward to Friday, the staff at Gale Pond Alamo, the entire staff, received the gift of a Consuela bag with other goodies inside and a certificate recognizing them as part of the It's Not About the Bag program. In a Zoom call during an afternoon assembly, a Consuela representative told them, It's Not About the Bag program is a reflection of the heart behind the Consuela brand to uplift, to celebrate, and to recognize the amazing person like all of you today that are positively impacting our lives. Consuela will recognize the GPA staff on its website on November 8th, National STEAM Day. The best part of it all is this. Friday was pajama day at Gale Pond Alamo, so the pictures shared online will show the staff in their PJs, elementary school life. TXANS, now available in Spanish language. ERCOT on Monday announced the Texas Advisory and Notification System, TXANS, a communications tool that delivers grid notifications ahead of significant weather conditions, will be available in Spanish. TXANS was first released in May 2023 and delivers three notifications, ERCOT Weather Watch, Voluntary Conservation Notice, and Conservation Appeal. We are excited to take the next step in our communications efforts by releasing Texans in Spanish, ERCOT CEO and President Pablo Vegas said in a news release. Keeping more Texans informed adds an additional level of transparency and awareness for the public on grid conditions. Users can select Spanish by selecting the Español button located in the top right-hand corner of the Texans webpage. For more information, visit Texas Advisory and Notification System, TXANS, at ERCOT.com/TXANS. Sign up to receive Texans email notifications and updates, and follow on social media. Texans notifications will be sent in English and Spanish. Texans notifications do not replace Energy Emergency Alert, EEA, notices, which will continue to be sent to the Emergency Alerts email distribution list. Texans notifications do not indicate emergency grid conditions are expected. Eye drops from CVS, Rite Aid, and others carry possible infection risk, FDA says. U.S. health regulators are warning consumers not to use more than two dozen varieties of over-the-counter eye drops because of the risk of infections that could lead to blindness. The Food and Drug Administration advisory applies to lubricating drops sold by six companies, including CVS Health, Target, Rite Aid, and Cardinal Health. Consumers should stop using the products immediately and avoid purchasing any that remain on pharmacy and store shelves, the FDA said in a statement Friday. The agency asked the companies to recall their products last week because FDA inspectors found unsanitary conditions and bacteria at the facility producing the drops. The FDA did not disclose the location of the factory or when it was inspected. No injuries related to the products have been reported at the time of the announcement, but the FDA encouraged doctors and patients to submit cases through the agency's online reporting system. Earlier this year, federal officials linked an outbreak of drug-resistant bacteria to eye drops from two companies, Easy Care and Delsam Pharma. More than 80 people in the U.S. tested positive for eye infections from the rare bacterial strain, according to the most recent update from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. After the products were recalled in February, health inspectors visited the manufacturing plant in India that made the eye drops and uncovered problems with how they were made and tested, including inadequate sterility measures. TxDOT issues traffic alerts for October 30th through November 5th. The Texas Department of Transportation has issued traffic alerts for the following dates and locations: Crane County, October 31st. Mobile road evaluations will be conducted on Farm to Market 1233 beginning at the intersection of FM 1233 and FM 1053 and continuing to Greeter Road, mile marker 244 through 260. October 31st through November 5th, crews will be performing a road rehab on FM 1233 beginning at the intersection of FM 1233 and FM 1053 and continuing for 4 miles, mile marker 244 to 248. Ector County, October 30th. Crews will be performing sweeping operations on US 385, mile marker 360 through 363, beginning at the intersection of US 385 and Gettysburg Street and continuing to East Borman Street. Martin County, October 31st through November 2nd. Crews will be performing debris removal on Highway 12, beginning 1.5 miles east of US 385 and North County Road, and continuing to Martin Big Spring County Line, mile marker 149 through 163. Crews will be performing road repairs on State Highway 137, beginning on State Highway 137 at Martin Dawson County Line, and continuing to State Highway 349, mile marker 292 through 324, and FM 26 beginning on FM 26 at the Martin-Dawson County line and continuing to County Road 115, mile marker 286 through 298, and State Highway 176, mile marker 282 through 284. Upton County, October 30th, crews will be performing debris removal at State Highway 349 beginning at mile marker 360 through 2 through 392 and on RM 2463, mile marker 366 through 379. Midland County, October 30th through 31st, crews will be performing road rating on FM 1213 beginning at the intersection of County Road 120 and State Highway 158 and continuing to State Highway 349, mile marker 322 through 330 and State Highway 191 beginning at State Highway 191 and State Highway 588 and continuing to Avalon Drive, mile marker 268 through 277. October 30th, crews will be performing road repairs at State Highway 158, beginning on State Highway 158 and Avalon and ending on Highway 20, mile marker 278 through 282 and State Highway 191, mile marker 267 through 268. New mental health support group is free. An Odessa speech therapist saw a need and plans to meet it with new mental health support groups on the first and third Monday of each month. Morgan Cadena, who co-owns Mojo Speech Therapy in Odessa, said the idea came to her and she got her church, Tanglewood Baptist Church, on board. "I'm a follower of Christ who also struggles with anxiety and depression," she said. "Several years ago, I began looking for a mental health support group. I have seen the value of fellowship and community through my own church and through support groups for other needs. I did not find a support group solely for mental health, which surprised me, as it is obviously a need. And who better to support the broken than the church? So I decided to start one, and I found this organization called Fresh Hope, which sounded like everything that I was hoping and praying for. Fresh Hope Mental Health Support Group will begin meeting on the first and third Mondays of each month at 6:30 p.m. on November 6th at Tanglewood Baptist Church, 3737 Tanglewood Lane. The groups are peer-led for those with a diagnosis and for their loved ones. There is no cost for the support groups. Cadenia said attendees can expect peer-led facilitated support groups. This will not be led by a professional counselor, therapist, doctor. Trained facilitators are typically people who are living with a mental health diagnosis of their own. She said the group topics and discussions will be led or facilitated by a person who has experienced much of what the group members are going through. She said what group sessions focus on will depend on the size of the group and preferences once the meetings begin on Monday. Breakout sessions are recommended if it is a large group. It can be divided by diagnosis or even by those with a diagnosis and loved ones of those with a diagnosis. Cadenia said, there is a need locally for support groups, and that primarily she is seeing folks dealing with anxiety. I speak to people daily who have walked or are walking journeys similar to mine. Reducing the stigma and getting churches and faith communities more comfortable with these topics has become a passion of mine. She said no one should suffer in silence or alone with dealing with mental health issues, and encourages Odessans to come to these free events. If you have felt alone, isolated, or stigmatized because of anxiety, depression, or other mental health diagnosis, please know that you are not alone and there is hope. These kinds of emotions make us feel as if no one could possibly understand, Cadenia said. I promise many understand, and more importantly, God understands. There is hope and joy in living in spite of a mental health diagnosis. That's what Fresh Hope is all about. Call 432-638-1847 for more information. First Friday has Dia de los Muertos theme. Odessa Arts, in partnership with Downtown Odessa Incorporated, has announced the lineup for the November 1st Friday event. Launched in August 2023, First Friday ODTX is a free community event where local businesses open their doors to the public with special exhibitions and activities celebrating Odessa's movers, shakers, and makers. First Friday, Dia de los Muertos edition, is from 6 to 9 p.m. November 3rd. Participating businesses on the main floor of the Cooper Rose Building, 415 North Grant Avenue, the West Texas Symphony is hosting a ticketed performance of Da Capo performed by the Permian Basin String Quartet. Also on the first floor will be baked goods for sale by Dough by Brother Rabbit. In the basement of Copper Rose Building, Retro Hall Video Games and Collectibles will be hosting game night and Halloween costume contest. Downtown Odessa Incorporated will be inside the Copper Key Gifts with Odessa Arts. If you purchase $20 or more from a participating First Friday store, you can get a free t-shirt from them by showing your receipt. Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, will be open for normal hours, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Stop by from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. for a First Friday free story time and children's craft. Homemade Wines, 400 North Texas Avenue, will have a live performance from jazz musician Al Haney. This will be in addition to their everyday offerings of wine tastings and various food from flatbeds to charcuterie boards. Make your own stamped silver jewelry for kids by Izzy's Fine Jewelry. 409 North Grant Avenue. Kids can make a Christmas gift for their parents or themselves. Joanne's on Fifth's Flowers, 610 West 5th Street, Odessa, will be hosting a DIY floral crown activity for this Dia de la Muertos-themed First Friday. McJack's General Store, 411 North Grand Avenue, Odessa, will be open for extended shopping hours. They just set up their Christmas merchandise and have specials on their Halloween merchandise. Odessa College Green Space, corner of East 4th Street and North Jackson Avenue, and the Crisis Center will be raising awareness for Domestic Violence Month, October, and partnering with them on a few activities at the plaza this Friday. The first 100 people will get an Odessa College portable speaker. There will also be food trucks, free hot chocolate while supplies last, live music, DJ, pottery demonstrations, culinary college hosting demonstrations, crafts for all ages, drawing, painting, recruitment table for OC, performances from a youth-based mariachi, ballet folklorico, and finishing with a performance by the OC Blues dancers. Odessa Marriott, 305 East 5th Street, is hosting a Fall Into Fun family night with yard games in their courtyard and drink specials for adults. Patrick's Clay's Tavern, 418 North Grant. Rooster's Diner, 615 North Sam Houston Avenue. Black Sheep Workshop and their painting Grinch Door Hanger sold out. Sacrificial Needle Tattoo, 1500 North Grant Avenue, is kicking off their first Friday in style with artwork for sale, face painting, Sassy Bee Creations, and Sweet Tea Boutique. They will also have $40 fine line tattoos. Skaliki Ballet, 118 East 8th Street, will host a free 30-minute ballet class from 6 to 6:30 p.m. The rest of their First Friday activities will be happening in their lobby featuring artist Lauren Estes and photographer David Wood. Sunflower RX, 110 East 7th Street, will host a live art demonstration from Colin Myers. Starbucks Downtown, 305 East 5th Street, will be hosting fan favorite Candace Harding for free typewriter poetry. Torchy's Tacos, 306 East 5th Street, will have caricature artist Daniel Tarango ready to draw you in a way you won't see in the mirror. Taco Republic, 415 North Grant Avenue, will have live music featuring Joe Campos. Pfluger urges Speaker Johnson, Leader McConnell to repeal Biden's natural gas tax. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, sent a letter along with 31 of his Republican colleagues to Speaker Mike Johnson and State Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, urging the repeal of the Inflation Reduction Act's Methane Emissions Reduction Program, MERP, before the end of the year. MERP is an inappropriate and highly unworkable tax that will reduce supplies of affordable energy and increase cost to Americans, a news release said. The letter is supported by the American Exploration and Production Council, AXPC. In the letter, Representative Pfluger writes, "This Congress, Republicans have made American energy security our top priority. As part of H.R. 1, the House voted in a bipartisan fashion to pass H.R. 1141, the Natural Gas Tax Repeal Act, to repeal the Inflation Reduction Act's Methane Emissions Reduction Program, MERP. We urge you to repeal the natural gas tax in a legislative package before the end of the year." American Exploration and Production Council President and CEO Anne Bradbury, "American energy producers' commitment to methane emissions reduction is unwavering, but the methane tax is an ill-conceived policy that, when combined with other proposals in development at EPA, is being weaponized to penalize American energy production which is some of the cleanest and most heavily regulated in the world. As a result, it will lead to less energy security and higher energy prices for American families and businesses. We applaud Representative Pfluger's leadership on this important issue and urge Congress to reconsider this punitive tax on American energy. Odessa man facing molestation charge. An Odessa man was arrested on a warrant Friday night, 4 months after a 9-year-old girl accused him of molesting her. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a woman came into the police department June 13th to say the child told her Eric Garcia Rivas, 35, had touched her inappropriately on several occasions, including once in Odessa. During a forensic interview, the girl described Rivas coming up behind her at an Odessa home and groping her, the report stated. She also said she woke up once in Monahans after Rivas placed her hand on him. According to the report, the woman who came into OPD said another police agency is investigating allegations made by another child. A warrant was issued for Rivas, and he was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of indecency with a child, sexual contact, a second-degree felony. He remained in custody Monday on a $40,000 surety bond. Fentanyl overdose leads to murder charge. An 18-year-old Odessa man who admitted to selling 200 to 300 deadly fentanyl-laced pills daily is facing a murder charge in the death of a 16-year-old who died of an overdose. According to an Odessa Police Department report, dispatchers received a 911 call around 7:20 a.m. October 2nd about a possible overdose in the 1200 block of Lindbergh. And when officers and paramedics arrived, they found Damian Aguilar unresponsive. Aguilar was taken to Medical Center Hospital for treatment, and a witness told officers they found the teenager sitting on the floor in his bedroom, and when they asked him if he was okay, he said no, the report stated. The witness tried to help the teen off the floor, but he lost consciousness, the report stated. The witness, who said Aguilar had overdosed on fentanyl in the past, administered Narcan and began giving him CPR. The witness told police they suspected Aguilar had overdosed on fentanyl-laced oxycodone or M30 pills because they'd seen him take them in the past, the report stated. Officers found 8 such pills in Aguilar's room, the report stated. The teenager was flown to a Lubbock hospital where he was declared brain dead, the report stated. He died the next day. An autopsy revealed a forensic pathologist suspected Aguilar died of a fentanyl overdose. Detectives discovered Nathaniel Martinez had supplied Aguilar with the fentanyl by searching Aguilar's phone, Instagram, and Snapchat messages and used geolocation tracking data, the report stated. On Friday, officers responded to an apartment on Andrews Highway and learned Martinez needed to be taken to Medical Center Hospital. At the same time, officers found him in possession of 21 grams of M30 pills. On Saturday, after he was discharged from the hospital, Martinez admitted he had been selling 200 to 300 M30 pills every day, and he'd sold pills to Aguilar, the report stated. He also admitted he'd seen 5 or 6 people suffer non-fatal overdoses, and knew people can die from overdosing on fentanyl, the report stated. Police used a new law that went into effect September 1st to arrest Martinez and book him into the Ector County Jail. Martinez was arrested on suspicion of murder, manufacture, delivery of a controlled substance, causing death, and manufacture delivery of a controlled substance. He remained in the jail Monday night on a surety bonds totaling $100,000. OPD investigating multiple thefts at Hobby Lobby. The Odessa Police Department is investigating multiple thefts that occurred between July 20th and August 28th at Hobby Lobby, located at 4642 East University. Investigation revealed that an unknown male stole approximately $439 worth of merchandise. Anyone who recognizes the suspect shown in the surveillance photos is encouraged to contact OPD at 432-335-3333 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 23-00-12638. Suspect. Weekend deaths related to drug deal. One of the suspects arrested over the weekend in connection with the deaths of two teenagers told authorities their deaths were the result of a drug deal gone wrong. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, deputies received a report about a gunshot victim in the 200 block of North Knox around 4 p.m. Friday, and when they arrived, they discovered a mortally wounded Kevin Adrian Roman, 18. Roman died of his injuries while in surgery. Security footage and witness accounts placed a Chrysler 300 at the scene of the incident, and it was later found with bullet holes and blood inside of it, according to the report. The vehicle belonged to Ethan Gabriel Ibarra, 20, and Ibarra and his passenger Victoria Balderrama, 18, came to the sheriff's office to provide statements. According to the report, Ibarra confessed to shooting Roman during a drug deal and led authorities to Pinwell, where the body of Dylan Elan Zubia was found with at least one gunshot wound. Ibarra also admitted he disposed of two firearms. Balderrama was arrested on suspicion of two counts of tampering with a human corpse. He remained in the Ector County Jail Monday on surety bonds totaling $75,000. Ibarra was arrested on suspicion of two counts of tampering with a human corpse and one count of murder. He remained in custody Monday on surety bonds totaling $175,000. Unaccompanied veteran burial at Rio Grande Valley State Veterans Cemetery. At 11 a.m. sharp, November 2nd, the Rio Grande Valley State Veterans Cemetery will conduct an unaccompanied veteran burial for U.S. Navy veteran Hull Maintenance Technician 3rd Class HT3 Bobby Grant Casey, born on November 15th, 1954. HT3 Casey served from August 1974 to September 1980. HT3 Casey is not expected to have any next of kin attend his burial. The Veterans Land Board wants to spread the word and ensure that this U.S. Navy veteran is not buried alone. Members of the mission community are encouraged to attend, a news release said. HT3 Casey will receive military honors. If no next of kin is present at the burial, a Veterans Land Board representative will accept the United States flag on his behalf. Laura W. Bush Institute for Women's Health Literacy Coalition to host Love Comes First, an evening with the Bush sisters. The Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, Laura W. Bush Institute for Women's Health and the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin will host Love Comes First, an evening with the Bush sisters, with special guests Jenna Bush Hager and Barbara Pierce Bush. The event is scheduled for 7 p.m. November 2nd at the Petroleum Club of Midland, 501 West Wall Street. VIP reception will be from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. The Bush sisters will speak about prioritizing love in a person's everyday actions. They will discuss their new book, Love Comes First, a joyful celebration of growing families inspired by Jenna and Barbara's own families. Jenna Bush Hager is a host of NBC's Today with Hoda and Jenna and the founder of Today's Read with Jenna book club. She also is the co-author of Our Great Big Backyard and Read All About It with her mother, former First Lady Laura Bush. Barbara Pierce Bush is a board member and co-founder of Global Health Corps, an organization that has mobilized young leaders to solve some of the world's biggest global health challenges. She also leads the National Basketball Association's effort around health equity, civic engagement, and social justice as Vice President of Social Impact. Visit laurabushinstitute.org. OPD searching for missing person. The Odessa Police Department is currently investigating a missing person case involving a 46-year-old man named Alejandro Valles. A family member notified OPD that Valles doesn't have a vehicle but was last seen in Odessa in early September. Valles is approximately 6'1" and weighs approximately 220 pounds. Anyone with information in reference to his whereabouts is encouraged to call Detective Kay Thompson at 432-335-4609 and reference case number 23-00126-43.
ECISD, police moving toward officers at every campus. Faced with a state mandate to put a police officer at every campus, Ector County ISD Police Chief Jeff Daniels said they are on their way to their goal of doubling the department step by step. House Bill 3, according to the Texas Association of School Boards, made many changes to school safety laws, including requiring districts to assign armed personnel at every campus. In August, Superintendent Scott Murray said ECISD couldn't meet the HB3 requirement by September 1st, as specified in the law, because of lack of funding and inability to hire the number of officers needed. But now the district is taking the funding out of the fund balance. Chief Financial Officer Deborah Ottmers said in an email that this is not something they want to do because they need to keep 90 days' worth of expenses in fund balance for cash flow purposes. She added that they have no choice, though. The state legislature has not authorized funding for school districts yet. We're going to hire 30. That's our goal, to be able to provide one for each campus and also keep current staff levels where they're at on our middle school and high school campuses, along with our specialized areas. We have an officer that picks up the bank deposits for the school system, so that position would stay in place. There are some positions that are still required for us to maintain a working department throughout the day and also manage campuses, Daniels said on October the 19th. The force has 32 officers and one part-time officer who takes care of the weekend calls. The minimum salary for 227 days is $56,096 a year. The midpoint is $67,192, and the maximum is $78,288. Salaries go up according to rank, the district salary schedule shows. Daniels is expecting that in January, they will have 10 to 12 new officers out of the 30. Moving into the second half of the school year, they are hoping to be at least over halfway toward the goal, if not a little bit better than where they are now. Daniel said they started the school year with 6 open positions within the current staffing levels. We filled those, and today we have hired 7 additional officers. We need about 23 positions. We've got about 5 other candidates lined up who are going through the process of onboarding and getting their certificates where they need to join our team. It is going really well. 30 is a big number, but we're accomplishing that goal a lot quicker than we expected, Daniel said. He added that they are competing salary-wise with the larger municipalities who pay more, but we're still able to recruit because this is a different style of policing. This is true community policing. That is the majority of our job, is being on our campuses, interacting with our students and our staff, creating a safer environment. We're just as busy as every other department in answering calls of service. I think one benefit to our recruiting is the hours that the officers work. There's no rotating shifts. There's no nights, typically nothing past an overtime assignment at a sporting event. The majority of weekends, they're open. They have that time off because we have overtime that we have to cover for athletic events. Then, of course, the biggest deal is being able to spend the holidays with family. They follow the same schedule the district follows, and having those holidays, that time off with family, it's huge. I think that's hard to put a price tag on. So I think that's what really helps us recruit and maintain staffing levels, where other agencies kind of struggle in that area, Daniels said. He added that they are drawing officers from everywhere. We've got officers from the Odessa Police Department, Midland Police Department, Ector County Sheriff's Office, Midland Sheriff's Office, Midland ISD, the Midland Hospital District. They're coming to us from all over. We've gotten some from the Kermit Police Department, some of the smaller cities around us. We're starting to draw some interest from them. We're really stepping up on our recruitment efforts. It's starting to show the dividends of the amount of time we're putting into it, Daniels said. To recruit officers, they use social media, but one of the best tools is word of mouth from their officers. We've had a lot of interest just from officers seeing the postings that we do. We recruit statewide through the TECOL, the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement website. They have a section in their website where law enforcement agencies around the state can post their openings. That's helped draw some interest from all over, Daniel said. He added that ECISD is doing everything possible to recruit the best applicants they can find, get them in position and trained as quickly as possible, but also ensuring that we're putting a qualified applicant out there that's capable of doing the job that we ask, Daniel said. We've cut several due to backgrounds and things like that. We have a very strict onboarding process. There's a lot of checks and balances that we follow through with, and there's a lot of mandates by the state now that really ensure that agencies are hiring the right person, he added. There is a system in place through the Texas Commission of Law Enforcement for backgrounds. In the past, we used to have to send an officer to wherever that police department was to look at their background packet. Now that stuff is uploaded to a statewide database, and there's a requirement for how much time the department has to get it done. The website is actually called TECOL Secure Share. We're a member of that, so when someone applies for us, we request their personnel file from any agency they've worked for, Daniels said. This is done so they can see the true background of the person and compare it to the criminal background packet they filled out. That's one of the big steps in getting the right person, Daniels said. Depending on where they sit with their licensing, onboarding can be longer or shorter. If they've been out of law enforcement for over 180 days, then we have to send them back to have a psychological exam. Then they have the drug test, the background visit, the background check, and then interviews, writing samples, physical assessment test. It can take 3 weeks, up to four, sometimes four per applicant, just to pass the initial background and all the pre-requirements. Once they're on, it's a 13-week program, unless they have prior experience, and are able to demonstrate that they're capable of doing the job with less training. But the minimum that it takes is 7 weeks, Daniel said. He added that it's a long, thorough process. We've had some applicants who have breezed through it because they had prior experience, which is very helpful, Daniel said. We try not to hire too many that don't have experience due to the nature of our job. When you're on a campus, you're the patrol officer. You're the investigator, so you do all the work. Whereas with a city police department, patrol will take the initial report and then forward that report onto a detective to determine if there's something they can investigate. We do everything. It helps if our officers have had that experience beforehand, Daniel said. If they don't, there is training to give them the experience they need to do the job. It's a really good program. We're really proud of what it does and the product that it puts out, Daniel said. The department has a goal of having one officer at every elementary campus. Our middle schools typically operate with one officer as well, and then our high schools operate with approximately five. But that's where our canines are deployed. So they don't only just service the high school. They're stationed at the high school, but they go out and service every campus we have. They house five, but some days there aren't always five, Daniel said. He noted that it would be nice to have two officers at the middle schools. I think in any situation, if we could add manpower, it would be a benefit. It's just such a huge cost to districts. This is a funded but unfunded mandate. It's a great expense. It's a great safety aspect, and ECISD stands behind that. Our goal is to make our campuses as safe as possible, and the number one recommendation from the state is to put a police officer on every campus, and that's what we're moving towards, Daniels said. On a connected item, Daniels said ECISD has installed impact-resistant film on all campus windows. We're following all state mandates on all recommendations and requirements for safety. We're out there ensuring that we do the best we can do in every area. Every recommendation that comes out from the state or mandate that comes out from the state, we're implementing. Luckily, we did get some money for that, so that did help, Daniel said. He added that they have gone with one of the best products out there for the film. I don't want to put all the details behind it out there, but it's one of the top products you can get across the country. It's a really great product. It really helps ensure the safety of our students and our staff, Daniels said. Permian High School art teacher Luis Fuentes is scheduling cactus donations for the campus's outdoor garden. Contributions have started coming in, but the garden is large, so the more the merrier. Since the winter months are coming, we wanted to put something out there that can survive the winter, and cactus are perfect. They can survive the upcoming bad weather. They don't require a lot of water, a lot of maintenance, and there's this one rocky area in the garden that they're perfect for. Any other kind of plant would struggle, but in the rocky patch that we found, it's perfect to have a cactus garden. As of October 19th, they had 12 cacti donated. They have been pretty small, but it's kind of a big area, so the more donations we can get, the better. One of the cool things that we want to do is, because we're getting so many different kinds of cactus, the garden is an educational space. So what we want to do is have information about the different species of cactus that are out there. That way the kids can go out there and learn about the cactus, Fuentes said. We want to incorporate AR into the garden, augmented reality. So there are going to be different plaques with QR codes. That way, when the students scan the QR code, it'll give them the name of the cactus, the information about it, the genealogy, and the variety. where this kind of cactus would typically grow and all that stuff. It's not just a pretty thing, but it's also an educational space, he added. Fuentes added that the thing about cactus is that they are native to this area, so there are a bunch of them everywhere. Some of the cacti come from people who grow their own. Others were found on the side of the road. They have mostly gotten donations from teachers, parents, and a few students who are in the garden club. There are 12 to 16 kids in the garden club. Fuentes said people can drop off cactuses at the PHS Welcome Center. Right now, they are just working on the cactus garden, but there is much more to do. They have to fix the greenhouse and the irrigation system, for example. The garden club is limited to working for about an hour after school, but they have made decent headway. In a few months, we're going to start asking for donations for Christmas lights. The garden is a space that continuously evolves and changes. We're going to start putting artwork out there. The artwork is going to rotate, and we're going to continuously add more and more features to it. It's going to be changing from year to year. The way it looks right now, the most important thing is getting the garden back to its original function. It's a botanical garden showcasing different varieties and species of plants, Fuentes said. Freshman Gatlin Lowry and sophomore Jimmy Denton are two of the garden club members. Lowry said the club has made him happy. Seeing the outdoors and the wildlife in it is what Lowry said makes him glad. Denton said he joined the garden club because it gave him something different to do. It is exciting, and it can also be tiring, Denton said. Dear Dr. Roach, my wife, age 69, has had issues for several years with high counts of red blood cells, hemoglobin, and hematocrit. This all started back in 2017. Recently, she has severe pain in her shoulder that wrapped around to her upper abdomen. After a visit to the ER, they ruled out heart attack and stroke, and a chest X-ray came back clean. Back in 2017, she did a 24-hour urine collection, which had a couple of high values, and an adrenaline tumor was ultimately found. They said it was benign. Given the fact that her father died from kidney cancer, is it possible that there might be an underlying issue not being seen? Should we ask for additional screenings? If so, what might we consider? Dr. Roach's answer, it's very hard for me to put everything together, and I'm not sure whether her symptoms relate to the abnormal lab findings of the high counts of red blood cells, hemoglobin, and hematocrit. All three of those are related measurements of red blood cells. The red blood cell count is the amount of red blood cells, while the hemoglobin level is the total amount of hemoglobin in grams in a deciliter of whole blood. The hematocrit level is the percentage of blood that consists of red blood cells. In a person with anemia, these levels are generally low, and high levels of any or all of these raise the question of an underlying cause. High levels are most commonly related to low oxygen levels or low blood flow states. Smoking and living in high altitudes are common reasons. The body senses low oxygen and secretes a hormone called erythropoietin, EPO. Many chronic heart and lung diseases can cause this EPO the same way. She should have had her oxygen levels repeatedly measured, including with exertion. Dear Abby, I'm having an issue with my longtime best friend. We no longer live in the same state, but we talk several times a week and try to visit every year. We both love crafting, and 2 years ago, I started making her a big, beautiful Canada cross stitch and had it custom framed. The project took several months, and she knew I was making it. She offered, I didn't ask, to make me a quilt from T-shirts I had collected over the years from various places I had been. So I cut the logos or graphics off the shirts and mailed them to her. She told me it would take her only a week to make the quilt. That was 2 years ago. It has been a year since I drove 6 hours each way to deliver my cross-stitch gift to her, and she still hasn't made the quilt. I have since moved even farther away. I miss home, and I really want the quilt. I have asked her about it several times. The quilt would mean so much to me, especially now that I'm more than 1,000 miles away, but she keeps making empty promises about finishing it. Meanwhile, she has found the time to create crochet and cross-stitch items for her extended family and remodel her kitchen. I'm so hurt about the whole thing that I'd like to ask her to return the T-shirt pieces to me. At least that way I could hire someone to make me the quilt. Am I being unreasonable? Signed, Waiting in the South. And Dear Abby answers, Dear Waiting in the South, what you are considering is not only reasonable, but also rational. The next time you and your friend chat, tell her you understand what a busy person she is. Explain that you would like her to find the time to return the fabric you sent so you can make other arrangements to have the quilt made. Smile when you say it so your tone will be warm and friendly. That way the friendship can continue if you wish. And another person writes, Dear Abby, at the beginning of the year, I broke up with my boyfriend. I went to a clinic to get tested for STDs, and everything turned out fine. A few months later, I started dating another guy I'd met last year. Everything was great until I realized he is HIV positive. When I asked him about it, he denied it. When I returned to the clinic to get tested again, I was told I am now HIV positive. We had been using protection, but stopped. I haven't told my family yet, but he knows. How can I give my family this news? Loved but confused. Dear Abby answers, Dear loved but confused, before you make any announcements to your family, schedule an appointment with your physician to discuss this diagnosis. You need to be put on antiviral medication as soon as possible. If you are still with this loser, he should be put on medication as well. Not only does his life depend on it, but he could infect many more partners. Once you have begun the treatment your doctor prescribes, inform your family. Do not be shocked if they want you to put the person who failed to mention he is HIV positive and then infected you in the rearview mirror.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.